That I really do. KK4JBQ. That now that we've been talking about this, it occurs to me. My memory recalls that the issue that was being addressed when this bench grinder was being balanced was that there was an awful vibration, and in a new grinder, brand new out of the box, an awful vibration, very noticeable. So dressing those stones was that was the thing to do, and that's what this was all about. It occurred to me that I had used a lot of grinders, a lot of polishers that were very similar, with polishing buffs on either side. And if you don't have a balanced system there, you will get unpredictable results and perhaps tragic results, not only to the parts, but also to the people using the machinery. So I understand now, and this is just fascinating to me, really fascinating. It's why I sat and watched this almost two-hour video of this fellow making all kinds of adjustments and dressing these stones. I'd never thought of dressing grinding stones, but I do understand now. I thought it was germane to the conversation, and the only thing I could think of adding, KK4JPQ.
Dealt with large grinds and wheels, and yeah, I definitely know what you mean there. We used to have some centerless grinders, and some of the wheels we had were, you know, 6 and 8 inches wide, and you would get one every now and then that would, you know, normally we were dressing a particular shape on them, so you were going to dress it anyway. But even if you were just doing a straight grind, we still would run across the face on a brand new wheel to get it dressed, and you know, like Chad was saying, that's translating directly to the part. We used to also have some planter grinders and various large surface grinders that had really big wheels on them, and we used diamond tip dressers on those. Even on bench grinders, we always called them just rattle wheels. It's a little metal stick with rollers on the end of it, washers, and then like spiked pieces, and they're alternate sandwiches. And you use those for dressing bench grinders. And I have run across some off-balance bench grinding wheels, and yeah, you just stick them on there and dress them up, and it takes your little craftsman bench grinder from trying to shake itself apart down to a tamed animal over.
Tamed animal. Yeah, that's what I observed. And it was well worth all of the work for a result that you were expecting. You must have expectations. That's another thing my dad taught me. If you don't have expectations and you'll take anything as an outcome, you're just not there yet. And in a way, that's not how I grew up. Things were slippy, slidey, you know, just good enough is good enough. And that was an awakening. That was eye-opening. And I know from some of the things Chad's talked with me about before, it can mean your life, it can mean your buddy's life. And so you don't accept anything but, and you must have those expectations that you know will keep you alive. Am I right, Chad?
Well, certainly. Yeah, certainly. Not quite sure how we got off of a grinding wheel onto that. I don't mean any disrespect. I'm just trying to find the connection there. Maybe I missed something. Can you say that again a different way?
I guess I moved along through several layers too fast. Before I could say I had any skills at all, and we all went through that period in our lives, and you continue to go with that through those things, perhaps a little quicker now, that you have some skills, but you're learning a new one. It's important to have an expectation, and that this should be high enough to ensure the outcome that you wish to have. So early on, I can remember my dad showed me how to change a tire and then how to bleed the brakes. And, you know, there's just two very big differences between, you know, the tire is in contact with the road. And, oh, yeah, that's important. But once you get up speed, it's important to stop. And that requires a lot more attention to the brake system than it does to change the tire, maybe. I'm just saying that that was a learning process. The outcome, if it can be disastrous, it just requires a lot more attention to detail. And then you get to a point, I'm sorry to say, you get to a point where you apply that same insistence on perfection. It's hard for me to back down a notch. It really is. I want perfection in everything I do. It's something I struggle with every day. And you'll understand if I relate it to people. You can't expect people to be perfect, to meet your expectations all the time. Hard lesson for me to learn. What do you say? KK4JBQ.
QE. Absolutely, I get it. So my lesson with Dad was just, and Keith's probably seen it before, in a plant, you know. Just because I've worked a summer with Dad with a bunch of welders does not make me a welder. And yes, I'm ashamed to say that when you're young like that, you know, and you're starting to learn a skill and you're around other people, you know, well, I'm a welder. And no, you're not. And Dad's always cautioned me with that, hey, you know, be careful with that, because, you know, there's some hard lessons that come with that. Because when it's, he used to call it all show and no stay. In other words, you know, if you're going to talk the talk, you got to be able to walk the walk. And he intentionally let me get into jobs sometimes that were way over my head, just for the lesson's sake. And, you know, I'm sure Keith's seen it, is you get a kid on a machine and he's, you know, excited because he's doing this or doing that. That don't necessarily make him a machinist, you know. Usually the ones that are really skilled, from my experience, at what they do is they are slow to commit and they are usually pretty quiet. Because they've been they've been in, you know, made some pretty drastic mistakes and have learned some pretty painful lessons that come with that. So, you know, that's been in my experience, and I'm certainly no exception to that. You know, I learned early on that be careful what you talk, because, you know, you may have to walk it. And the best thing to do is just, you know, just say what you are. And if people want to be, you know, friends with you, then that's the kind of friends you want. You don't want to be around workers and other friends that, you know, bloat and float things, you know what I'm saying. But that's my point.
Did you call attention to the fact that the repeater is probably out of net mode, and I do believe it's set at 4 minutes. We would be fortunate if we continue not to time out the repeater. But I just wanted to say that. I think it goes out of net mode at midnight. KK4JPQ.
Well, I mean, if y'all want me to turn it off, I'll turn it off. But I haven't shut the net down either. So, but I mean, it don't matter. We'll be mindful about it. Doesn't bother me at all. But Keith, what do you think? You've seen what I'm saying. I've been there before.
Yep, absolutely, and I will throw in, get somebody like that that's overly cautious, but that goes a long way too. I'm mostly on the CNC side, so I'm quick to point out, see this big red button here? If you think anything's wrong, slap that button, because that saves thousands of dollars worth of equipment. So, yeah, that's a good trait to have too, And back to the grinding wheel thing, I have seen some mishaps on keep aluminum and soft metals off of a grinding wheel, you'll clog the wheel up, and I have seen some explosions that came out much better than they could have been, but still pretty nasty. And then on the centerless grinders, these wheels are, you know, usually like 18-inch diameter and 6 or 8 inches wide. And when one of those goes south, it's a lot of momentum behind it, so it can do some major damage. Luckily, most of the ones we had, you didn't have to worry about it too much on the Blanchard because it's enclosed. But the centerless grinders had shields around them, and I've seen some pretty nasty scars in those shields over.
I've had a hard lesson with a grinder. I've never been hurt. I've never had a wheel explode. But I have had it jerk the part off of the magnetic vise. And, that's I'm kind of particular where I put that surface grinder. My thought process with the surface grinder is that it goes, I don't choose where the surface grinder goes. The grinder chooses where to go by the direction of the wheel, because when it slings the part out, if it does, and stainless is, I hate stainless because it's not that soft metal, but it swells when it grows when it heats up. I don't care how much coolant you put on it, it's, you know, where that contact is happening, it's gonna grow on you, and it'll sling a part out. I'm gonna sling it off the vise in a minute. So the grinder goes when it slings the part out. It doesn't, you know, go into a welding machine or go into a acetylene bottle or something like that. It goes into a false wall or a wall, you know. And yes, I do have a couple holes down there. And in the wall, and the shields are pretty beat up. And I know Keith is thinking, well, Chad, what are you doing that's slinging these parts out? But I don't know, Keith. It just kind of happens for me sometimes. It always seems to happen with stainless. I don't know why, but I do some stainless work, and I don't like working with it with a grinder or any other machine for that matter. It's just horrible.
It's not. It's a little softer, but it's more like a gummier. And yeah, I've been there and done that. You always keep the business end of a surface grinder clear of valuable equipment or valuable soft targets like humans, because it will eventually happen. And when that stuff happens, it goes so it's over before you know it happens. So, it would take just a few hundred milliseconds and do some major damage.
Fellas, KN4 ASV, I believe it was KN4 NUE. Go ahead, ma'am. ASV KO4 NUE. Go ahead, ma'am. There must be some kind of ducting or something. I don't know what's going on, but I definitely heard a call. But anyway, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Larry.
Heard that also, Chad. Just want to make clear to anybody listening, if you'd like to join us, that's perfectly fine. And that's just the way to do it, too. It just happened that you were right on the cusp of a double, which made it difficult to make out your call. But, Chad, if you got it, kudos to you. I couldn't hear it clearly. And it did sound like a young voice or a female voice. So if you're still listening, we'll give you a little free air time here. Just we won't key up again for a bit. Give you another opportunity. KK4JBQ.
AFT KO4NUE. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hello, Mike, 4 Echo Foxtrot Tango. Yeah, I've been listening to you for most of the end of the net. I work in a plant, and I was listening to you talk about stuff flying out of the grinder. I don't work on the grinder, but I had an end mill come flying at me, so that hit the deburr wheel. It hit the deburr. The thing that holds the deburr wheel and didn't hit me, thankfully, but I haven't met anybody who had an end mill come flying at them yet, like a major piece of a end mill. Have you had that happen to you? That was on kind of like a old CNC mill.
I've had fragments of most any kind of tool you can think of fly my way or in close proximity. Company I used to work for, well, the defense contractor, we used a lot of carbide end mills, and when they go south, they usually go south into pieces, and even when you're a number of feet away and that stuff catches you, it still stings really bad if it don't draw blood on it.
Had it actually hit you? I haven't had a big piece of, end mill hit me, but that was the closest one it came to me. And after that, I was more mindful of standing in front of it.
One more thing real quick. I know Chad is a firm believer more in safety squints than because of mishaps like that, I'm pretty firm on the safety glasses camp. So, any kind of shielding you have available, definitely use it. Go ahead, Chad.
KO4NUE. Keith, you're going to fuss at me because I know Larry's sitting back in the background going, no, he's not, Keith. So I gotta be honest with you, I do not wear safety glasses. I do not. And I know you're gonna think, oh, that's horrible. It is horrible. It really is. But here's what happens is that chip always gets behind my glasses. Always. Or it gets in my hair. And then when I come up to the house or sit down in the chair or go take a shower, that's when the chip usually gets into my eye. Now, I'm not saying that I've never had a chip or something get in my eye in front of the machine. What I'm saying is that it just, the percentage for me in my mind is that they always get more chips in my eye. Because it gets behind the lens and usually bounces into my eye is what happens. And I know that sounds like an excuse, but I promise you, I have tried and tried and tried to make it work, and it just doesn't work for me. Now, a grinder, different story. That thing will kill you. So, I'm like Shannon. Kind of be careful where I stand with that stuff. I've got one machine down there. It's a Winona Van Norman 85B block mill. And its only job is to surface the head, the surface of a block deck or a head, a cylinder head. And it's got an 18-inch teeth on it, 18-inch wheel, and the cutters are, every 2 inches. And you get hung up in that thing, it'll hurt you. But I don't wear glasses with it either, because it always ends up in my eye. But let me hear it. I know you're going to fuss, so let me hear it.
KK4JVQ. You were right. It just made me cringe. Now that this topic is in front of us, safety glasses, Chad doesn't wear them. Face shields, Chad doesn't wear them. Gloves, Chad doesn't wear them. And we don't have to say anymore. but I will say, welcome to Shannon. It's not an unfamiliar voice to me. I recall you participating here on this frequency some years back, and it is a pleasure to hear you, Shannon. You're welcome anytime. KK4JBQ.
Yeah, I remember you, Larry, and being on here late at night. And when I did call the net some too a while back, but that mill is all the Akuma in it. The it sits up high, so it's got these little shields, but the shields are too low to keep chunks of the part flying out and stuff, so it's kind of unusual, but they can do different stuff on it because it is so high. But anyway, I'm probably going to go to sleep pretty soon, but it's a very interesting conversation because I see, I don't actually have training except for on the job, and I see people doing things, but I don't know what their thinking is behind it. So it's really nice to hear what you guys think while you're working on grinders and all that. KM4EFT.
For AFT, KN4CHY, name here is Keith. I'm over in Seneca. Nice to meet you, Shannon. If you take an interest in that kind of stuff and you see somebody doing something that you don't quite understand, I grew up in a culture that's why you ask. So I would encourage you to, if you want to go down that path, definitely do so. Ask somebody, ask some more knowledgeable people, and you'll probably find one that'd be glad to help you. But just be mindful of all that stuff when it's going on, because you know, you might have your back to it, and it only takes less than a second to happen. So, yeah, and Chad, I was, I guess you've not watched AVE on YouTube. He has this thing, and I was contradicting my philosophy and your philosophy. He has this thing called safety squints. So when you're doing up something up close like that, and you know there's a risk of chips going in your eye, you just squint real tight, and that way they can't get in your eyes. But yeah, I've had the same thing happen periodically. One of the worst ones was used to work in Fountain Inn that we made hydraulic pumps, so they were cast iron castings, and got off work, and we had this little airlock room where the time clock was on your way out the door, and I got in the airlock room and took my glasses off to punch out, and got a sliver of cast iron in my eye, and it basically, I went to the, I think it's an ophthalmologist, and he used a battery-powered dye grinder, and he showed it to me before he did it, and that little piece of cast iron had a probably a 3/16 or so circle of rust around it already by the time I got to him, and he took the little battery-powered dye grinder and proceeded to grind it out of my eyeball. So that was a big learning lesson for me. Over to
you, E. Like I said, I no excuses. I got to say, I know it's wrong. I do. But I just... I'm just not comfortable with it, and I've gone to the doctor and have stuff dug out of my eye, and I think one of the most interesting was I went for an MRI years ago, and they, what do you do, what do you do for hobbies, what do you do for a living? Well, I've got a machine shop. Oh, really? Okay, well, let's, we need to put this special dye in your eyes, and let me look. And I actually got rejected one time from MRI, and I had to go to an eye doctor and get a piece of metal dug out that had, started to rust, he said. But, obviously it wasn't big or anything, just kind of dust or whatnot, but I've gotten pretty good with, like here, no excuses now, okay? Let me just end it there. There's nothing I can say. I know it's wrong, but I'm not going to do it. I sit here and talk all night about excuses, but I know it's not right, but I do it anyway. But Shannon, y'all hang on one second. Let me shut this net down, and then we'll keep talking, but let me get my net report in. Stand by. All right. I got it submitted. It didn't announce, but, I think we're out of net mode, so might get fussed at by Dave tomorrow, but that's okay. It's worth it.
Thank you. I don't know if you'll get fussed at, but yes, this is worth it. It's every bit worth it. And Shannon, I hope you're not queasy. my stomach turned a couple of times when Chad was talking about going into an MRI with that very strong magnetic field and they're being concerned about ripping this sliver out of his eye. Oh, gosh. Well, anyway. Gosh, what was I going to say? As a jeweler, and I had to repair many things, and we did so with a flame. Oh, I did some induction soldering from time to time, but mostly it was with a flame. And you have to be very precise in the size of your flame, the heat adjusted to the metal that you're melting or soldering. And you have to get real close to that flame. And so I was always conscious of my distance from the flame, because that that's heat, and you won't know the damage is coming until it's already over. It's a similar thing. But we should be cautious. We try to affect change in things all around us. Sometimes it's our job, sometimes it's our hobby. But being aware of how fragile the human body is and what the outcomes might be, I'm concerned for you, Chad. I'm concerned for your eyesight, and it's a precious thing. Tightly fitting goggles. What do you think of that? KK4JBQ.
Nope. Not gonna do it. Not gonna do it. I know Keith is going. Oh man, this guy—he can't be good at what he does. Well, maybe not. I mean, I think I'm pretty good at it, but I'm not gonna do it. Now, well, there's a couple exceptions to that. So one of the exceptions is a fly cutter. So I have a fly cutter I run in the mill. You have to with a fly cutter. It just, you know, you can't take a lot of material off, and when you can't take a lot of material, the chips get smaller, and you have to run it at a high rate of speed and feed rate to get, you know, a good finish on it. So that's one of the exceptions for that. You know, and I will occasionally own the lathe if I can't get the cutter to peel the chip right, and some material just won't. That I just, you know, 4140, it's kind of hard for me to control sometimes, but there will be times if I have to run a high speed and that chip gets small, then I will wear. But generally speaking, if I can keep the chips a certain size, no, I do not. But I don't want you to think I'm a complete idiot. There are certain situations that I will. But what do you think about that, Shannon?
State of anxiety not wearing any safety glasses. I wear these ones that are prescription now. I didn't for a while. I wore just the ones they offered there, but it seemed like it's true that the chips get behind the glasses. That's true, because I've had chips in my eyes, but not where I had to go to the doctor, but if you know what I mean, like you can feel them in there, and then they just sort of come out on their own. Like, I'm probably talking about aluminum chips. They just kind of come out on their own if you don't panic and try to get them out. But they do get behind there. But I think I would be so afraid of them getting in my eye that it might affect my work. Because I've had this piece of wire come flying and sort of get embedded in there. And ever since that happened, I've been especially wanting to keep them on.
KM4EFT. CH West. Hey, Larry, going back to your point with Chad on the gloves, I'm a firm believer in no gloves also. Now, if I'm handling a bunch of end mills and stuff, we've got cut-resistant gloves that we'll use, but you get near rotating machinery, and to me, gloves are a big no-no. Yeah, again, this stuff happens so quick. You grab a tip of a glove in an end mill or on a lathe or something, and I'm sure Shannon knows this too. These machines don't care two bits about you. They will eat you alive. Yeah, there's certain things I won't do, and Chad is FaceTime with me, so he probably knows I've got long hair, so long hair is always, you know, kept out of the way, and preferably under a hat or a do-rag or something to keep it out of the machinery, and no loose-fitting clothing and no gloves. Or...
Yeah, I cut the fingers out of my gloves, and if I can get away without wearing anything, I do, but some of it I just have the fingers cut out so that it can't get caught in there. Is that... I don't know if that sounds good enough or not.
Keith is right. Rotating equipment and gloves is not smart at all. Anything that'll hang. If something that rotates is just dangerous. Keith, about 3 years ago, I think I've told Larry this, I've got a seat and guide machine down there that I used to put seat and guides and cylinder heads with. And it's working on a 460 head, and it has a dome and built to cast into the head where the valves sit. And it's a rather deep dome, compression dome. And I was putting a guide in the intake on one of them. And the machine that I run, and Shannon, I'm saying this because it's not necessarily always about speed. This thing turns really, really slow. It's got a big gearbox on top, so you can slow it down. And I have a bad habit about grabbing the spindle to stop it so I can make adjustments to the cutter. And otherwise I have to wait for it to stop. So I reached and grabbed the spindle. I wasn't thinking. And my pinky got, the cutter came around, grabbed my pinky, and pulled it into the backside of the compression dome in between the cutter and the dome. It was horrible because that slow stuff is horrible because you can see it coming and you can feel it. That quick stuff is a little bit different. But anyway, long story short, got my finger hung in the thing, and down there by myself was hollering for Dad. He couldn't hear. He's up at the house. And had to reach up and put the machine in reverse to get my finger out. And that just was a really bad experience. And I know it sounds dumb, and it probably was, but, I mean, that's how you learn, I guess, But that was a horrible feeling sitting there. I'd grab the on-off switch and say, okay, you can do it. And then I'd chicken out. But eventually I had to. I didn't have a choice, But I've had some hard lessons with equipment.
JK4JBQ, you got me with that one, Chad. Well, I could feel it. As you were talking, I could feel it. The only thing that, in my experience, being a jeweler and a machinist, there are some similarities, I have to admit, but there's working on a polishing machine. Polishing with buffs and abrasives. Polishing chains. Worst possible thing to do because the way I was taught to do it was to hold the chain in your hands against the spinning buff. And it might be going a couple thousand RPMs. And the chain get away from you. It's gone. It's in dozens of pieces. I recall during my training, I was just going to soak up as much as I could. I'm just that kind of person. So I polished other people's, we had five jewelers, and I polished everybody's work because I wanted to get good at it. I knew I'd have to polish my own work and be responsible for that. But I was polishing other people's work. And I let a couple of chains go through the polisher machine. And I swore I was going to find another way. So in jewelry work, you use we use a lap stick, which had very fine abrasive on a stick that was about 10 inches long, and we just use it by hand and lap of, say, the side of a ring shank. And it'd be before doing any polishing. Well, so we had these and wore them out, and most people just tossed them away. I kept mine because, I don't know, I can't throw a tool away, I suppose. And I thought, well, Larry, just lay the chain on the lap stick and move that through the wheel as it's spinning. I don't have fingers in the way. I can't get caught. The chain can't get caught. It improved everything about the results. I passed this along to other people, and everybody started lapping their chains that way. And it was a safer way to do it. KK4JBQ.
Okay. KO4NUE.
The only thing I ever did that can relate to what you're saying about something slow moving was when I was kind of new in that department, because I started out in shipping and then I got moved to assembly and where the tool and die area is. And I was running percussion welder, and it has this clamp on it that holds the part in place. And I got my finger caught in the clamp, but I thought something worse was happening. I didn't know. I was new at it. And I didn't know how to release the clamp. And I was sitting there with my finger cut in there. And it wasn't a huge deal that they took me to the urgent care or whatever, but my finger was numb for a month. And never was really totally the same, but that's about the thing I can relate to on that. KM4EST.
It's called that Jeweler's Rouge, and we've got little round sticks, brown, which is coarse, red, green and white, and that's all different grits, I guess. But I don't do a whole lot of polishing, but sometimes that helps with a boo boo when you make a boo boo on something or that kind of gets me is when you got. And I mean, Keith, I guess everybody can relate to this, is when you got, the piece of material you got costs a lot of money, and you spend a week on it, and you get down to, the last couple of cuts you need to do to finish the part, and you mess it up. That's a horrible feeling. And that right there is why, and the welders, Keith, they know enough to know, okay, he's made a boo-boo. This is my opportunity to nail him. So I guess that's why welders are the way they are, because they know.
4CHY, yep, that's like I said, we had a... even our, more polite welders would still give you a rash of it if you come over there with a part you screwed up. you don't have to go see them much, but when you do, it's like, come on, man, hook me up. And Shannon, you reminded me of an industrial mishap that I had. I worked for a chemical company when I lived in Baton Rouge, and you were putting these sacks on basically the bottom of a silo, and it would fill them up to a weight, and there were pneumatic clamps that would clamp the bag, fill it up, and then they would unclamp, and we were always trying to beat the other shifts in production, and I had my rhythm going, and kind of miscalculated on reaching for the bag, and it unclamped and caught my finger in the clamp as it unclamped, and went to hit the e-stop to get my finger out, and come to find out they had mounted the e-stop button on the back side on the opposite corner of where I was standing at operating the machine, so I had to wait for the technicians to get down there to get my finger out, so they shut the line down and relocated that emergency stop button for me. Over.
Well, that's good that they did that. Yeah, I could have reached what, but see, I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't even really understand it because I was so new at that. So, I didn't think you might have sort of a similar experience. KM4EFT.
Can you let me make sure I got this? I am sorry to say I am tired out. I need to shut my eyes for a little while. I hate to shut things down, but y'all continue on. I'm gonna clear on out and try to get a little bit of rest. Shannon, it was a pleasure talking with you, and I'm glad you joined us in tonight's discussion. Keith and Larry, I enjoy talking about things, you know, like that. That's kind of in my wheelhouse. But anyway, 73, see y'all. Y'all have a wonderful night. And it's KL4NUE. I'm going to secure my station.
Just looked up at the clock to see what time it is, too.
Wow.
I guess that pretty much concludes tonight's edition of Shop Talk. And Shannon, I guess I had your call sign right to begin with, KM4EFT. Nice to meet you, and you're in here. Definitely jump in if you're so inclined. Larry, enjoyed it, and I think I'm going to take Chad's cue and head off to bed here shortly. 73's folks, have a good evening or a good morning, and we'll catch y'all around here some other time. KN4CHY, I'll be clear after y'all smile.
Everyone's bowing out, and it's about time, really. It's been a while since I've been up this late. Shannon probably remembers that we used to have a midnight net. We called it different things, of course. Everybody had an idea of what it should be called. I thought it didn't need a name. But the Midnight Express was the one that stuck. But it's been such a pleasure to hear you here tonight, Shannon, and to know that you still have a radio and use it, for crying out loud. But I'll be bowing out, too. This is KK4JBQ. Thank you for everybody's thoughts tonight. I certainly have enjoyed it. 73.
And let me join in on the conversation. And I didn't know there was people talking shop on here now, but that's great. I miss talking on this. I have a J-Paul inside my house right now because I discovered that my antenna wasn't working out there, so I have to work on that. Good night to everybody, and hope you have a great rest of the weekend. KM4EFT.